Lord, how can I help?
I'm really sorry to bother you, but I think my computer's playing up.
What seems to be the problem?
It's just not working. It was all right yesterday. I had email and Internet Explorer. And I was using Word as well. And now it looks like it's crashed. It just doesn't make much sense.
Okay, let me have a look. There does seem to be a lot of activity on the network. You may have caught a virus.
Every day, it's the same story for IT help desks around the world. Computer security seems to be a problem which cannot be solved. No matter how much security hardware and software we install in our networks, no matter how much training IT staff and end users are given, if there is a weakness on your network, you can bet a hacker will find it. Welcome to ComputerWeekly.com podcasts, where you can listen to and download interviews with leading experts on key topics of IT management and technology. I'm Cliff Saran, my guest today is Phil Cracknell, and we are talking IT security. Phil is a Director of Information Security at Deloitte. He is also the President of the Information Systems Security Association, ISSA, and a member of the British Computer Society Security Forum. It is hard to avoid IT security, and IT security has certainly been one of the hottest topics on ComputerWeekly.com. So, Phil, do you believe the IT security situation is getting better or worse for end users?
Well, I think we've now got a higher state of business as usual in terms of security. End users within corporations feel more controlled, possibly more monitored, certainly more restricted. But I do feel that they also still feel incredibly vulnerable. Since we've seen the end of compliance programs and regimes such as Sarbanes-Oxley, we find that we've got a higher state of readiness, a higher state of business as usual. I think, however, they still feel vulnerable.
Okay, Phil, so why are networks, operating systems and applications insecure?
Well, it's a difficult one. We've got the trade-off between security and, of course, all the benefits of those operating systems, such as ease of use, plug and play, performance, interoperability, access, all the things that the users demand. But of course they don't demand security. And so when you use an application, for example, you need it to work, you need it to perform, you don't need it to be secure.
It does seem that security best practices and the demands from end users for new functionality appear to be at odds. What do you think?
Well, if you ask yourself as a corporation, would you spend twice as much money and wait twice as long for an application or an operating system to be delivered if it were secure? I think most people would answer no. Instead, if industry were to self-regulate itself and ensure that it didn't release anything until it was absolutely secure, then the user base would demand far quicker delivery and software would never be delivered to the marketplace.
So why shouldn't the IT industry be held accountable for the problems it creates with insecure software?
It's another difficult one. The industry actually wants to deliver to the demands of the user. And of course the user base want it now, but equally they want it secure. So they're at odds. And what we're finding more and more now are independent organisations, associations, things like the BCS Security Forum, ISSA, Jericho Forum, wanting to offer some balance to this dispute, wanting to bring some common sense, preferred practice, maybe even to broker a midpoint between the industry and its software delivery capabilities, and the user base and its high demands.
Now, Phil, you are the president of the Information Systems Security Association, ISSA. What is your goal for the ISSA?
I'd like to see the ISSA act as a catalyst to bring together the many disparate organisations such as Jericho, IASP, ISC Squared, the BCS Security Forum, ISARCA, URIM. 101 of these organisations exist within the information security marketplace. And between them, they have some common objectives, be that thought leadership, accreditation, training, professional membership, whatever it might be. The ISSA wants to focus on where the gaps are, what these organisations don't provide, because you can always find one or two that will provide you with what you want. But occasionally there's something you need that none of them provide.
So specifically, are there some examples you can give me of what the ISSA is looking at?
Yeah, I mean, one particular initiative that we're looking at right now is calling the ISSA a bit of an incubator for security professionals that are below the CISO and CSO level grades within our industry, that have a career path firmly targeted in that area, but have no exposure to these high-level individuals. They have no networking opportunity with these individuals, and so the thought leadership is purely through magazines and articles. They don't get to meet the CISOs in the current industry on a day-to-day basis. And if the ISSA, for example, can put on events that would allow this to happen, to grow these individuals through their career path, to meet and ultimately become members of these exclusive CISO clubs that exist, then we've achieved one of our objectives.
Do you perceive there is a gap for newcomers to move up the management chain from where they are to becoming the chief security officer?
I think there are gaps throughout that career progression. What I also see is that we've got very much an exclusive club with heads of security. And for so many new people through Holloway and Westminster and the various universities that are offering the security degree now in the UK, for so many new starters in this industry, there isn't a clear route to that top. There isn't a clear route to become CISO. So what we're trying to offer are networking opportunities, mentoring for the career path, a forum for learning, of course, and exposure to those otherwise very elusive thought leaders.
Phil, where would you like to see UK IT security?
Well, I'd like to see IT security part of everyday life, not even considered to the degree it's considered now, just accepted, part of steady state, part of our normal business as usual environment. I think we'll see more regulations and more legislation steer us down a path that we all appreciate is inevitable. But, and I'm not going to criticise the imposing of regulations and compliance into our industry, because it has got us where we are. I think what we're starting to see now, the very early shoots of something quite promising in terms of growth. So we're starting to see organisations offering professional qualifications in our industry and accreditation, something that we can measure an individual's achievements by. And as a result of that and the compliance, regulation and legislation controls that we've gone through recently, we're now getting to a point where the state of information security as a whole is much, much better than it was, but it's still got a long way to go. We have to continue this development of professional environments, adherence to regulation and legislation, but try and jump ahead perhaps 4 or 5 years, be a little bit more proactive and put common sense preferred practice security evergreened into your organisation rather than wait for some compliance to tell you to do it.
How much responsibility do you think lies with the end user?
I think the end user has a great deal of responsibility in ensuring that information security is well adopted within the organisation. Ultimately, we as security or business managers can put in place the technology. We can have the processes and policies that describe how those systems should be used. But the exponents of that particular art, the users of the system, are the ones that need to adhere to, understand, and follow the process. And a good example of this, Cliff, would be where an organization puts in place all the technology possible to prevent an attack taking place via email or email being misused. But a user at the other end of this chain, if you like, was still able to circumvent those processes and technology that was put in place to protect them because of lack of awareness. So the example in question is a user renaming an attachment to get that particular email message under the filters and out of the other side. Or, as is all too common now, the use of removable media and memory sticks. Organisations, to be honest, have to rely upon common sense and end-user awareness for that particular piece of protection to work. It is very difficult to control USB devices. Again, it's the security at odds with functionality. We want to be able to plug in USB devices and have them recognised instantly. So we don't want to take the draconian approach of restricting all USB devices, but we do expect a user to realise that they can't just plug in a USB device, extract data to it, unplug it, and forget about security.
Thank you, Phil, and thank you for listening. You can download all our interviews from www.computerweekly.com/podcasts.